There's some new people here because I see you have a Bhagavad Gita in your lap. So first of all, welcome. And the topic that I want to speak about is from Srimad Bhagavatam, another nice book, only it's not just one volume, it's a number of volumes, like that big on your shelf. Srimad Bhagavatam. But the message of Bhagavad Gita and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam are very natural companion literatures. One is spoken by Krishna and the other is spoken about Krishna, so they have a lot in common. And especially for our new people, so that you can relate a little bit to the topic I want to speak about. This Srimad Bhagavatam, it was written by the same personality, the literary incarnation of Krishna, named Vyasadeva. He compiled all the Vedic literature, which includes Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two principal personalities interacting. One is the speaker, and that's Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then there's the receiver, and that's the king at the time, whose name is Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was related to the same main personality who is in Bhagavad Gita, or the two personalities. Speaker is Krishna, and the receiver of Krishna's message is Arjuna. So Arjuna was one of five brothers who were heirs to the throne. They were the successor king following their father Pandu. And the son, one of Arjuna's sons, was Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu's son was Maharaj Parikshit. So skipping a lot of intrigue and history, Abhimanyu was killed, the other sons of the Pandavas were killed. Maharaj Parikshit was the only remaining heir to the throne. He was the incumbent king. And something very awful, very, very, very awful, was deliberately done by a very heinous personality who tried to kill the child by a mystical mantra, a weapon, a Brahmastra weapon. This little boy is going to have to go somewhere. Mataji, this little boy is going to have to go somewhere. Like, back there. This little boy is going to have to go somewhere. You speak English? Don't speak English. That explains it. Somebody that speaks Hindi can let her know. And she doesn't speak English. Why she's seated in the front row is really amazing. Who can say? Thank you. Okay. So while Maharaj Parikshit was still within the womb of his mother, a very heinous personality was deliberately trying to destroy the dynasty of the ruling kings, or the should-be ruling kings, the five brothers, the Pandavas. So he knew this very specific mystical art of how by mantra to release a weapon an invincible weapon that would very singularly seek out the designated object and destroy the object and nothing else. Just like they try to do this in modern warfare, don't they? Like some kind of missile, that smart missile or something, it goes around corners and, you know, up trees and whatever it does. So, you know, tries to seek out the target and just zap the target. It's not a new idea. In Vedic time, there was such a weapon. It was subtle, released by mantra. So, one Brahmin, so-called Brahmin, knew that mystic ability, and he released a Brahmastra weapon towards the child within the mother's womb. And she saw the weapon coming. And what did she do? She ran to Krishna. Krishna! This terrible weapon has come to destroy the child within my womb. Let that weapon destroy me. But please protect the child. Natural sentiment for a mother. And Krishna accepted her prayer, and he made an expansion of himself appear within the womb of the mother, and with his own mystic power he checked the heat weapon. It was a fire weapon, like something like an atomic weapon. Lots of heat. So heat counteracted the heat and it stopped the weapon. And simultaneously, as it stopped the weapon, Krishna had a second purpose. He wanted to give his sight, his darshan, to the child within the womb. So the child, before he was even born, he was famous. He didn't even do anything. He was already famous. Maharaj Parikshit. Krishna has special favor upon this child. Everybody understood what happened. Because the nature of the weapon, it was invincible. It couldn't be checked by anything. But it was checked by Krishna. Because he's better than anything. So when he had his name-giving ceremony in Vedic culture, when the new child is born, there are many rituals that are observed, but one of them is very qualified astrologer or astrologers are invited to do the astrological chart and tell what is going to be the future of the child. And especially of interest was for the brothers who wanted to make sure that there was an heir to the throne. There's a whole chapter dedicated to describing the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. I'm doing this for a purpose. It's to help us understand how qualified is Maharaj Parikshit. He was this very special personality, as mentioned. Before he did anything, he was famous. He was honored by the Lord. He was given the darshan, the vision of the Lord. In fact, they named him for that. His name was the examiner. Parikshit means the examiner. Because his whole life, he was looking. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Is he here? His whole life, searching for Krishna. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj. So there's, to make a long description short, there's several chapters dedicated to helping us understand the greatness of this personality. Exceptional, transcendental personality. We need a little help in this department over here. Someone that speaks Hindi can help her understand what the program is when we come to the temple. She's making like she doesn't understand. Yeah. Mataji? Mataji? What's that? They don't understand Hindi either. Oh. What's the new language? Huh? Gujarati. Bhutan. My goodness. Okay, there they go. How can they can sit and not understand a word? I don't know. And think it's nice. And the child is... okay. Different cultures, I guess. Back to Maharaj Parikshit. After a number of years, Maharaj Parikshit became king. He grew up. He ascended to the throne. He became of sufficient age that he could look after the kingdom. And the quality with which he ruled the kingdom is also described. Very virtuous king. He protected the principles of dharma or religiosity. He was loved by everyone. Everyone felt very safe and protected. An emblem of a virtuous king. Something not to be found in our modern time. Not even close. So as virtuous and elevated as he was, something happened. There's in your Bhagavad Gita, those of you that received one, you can look up later. There's a verse, chapter 9, text 30, where Krishna says, even if, apichet, even if someone who is fixed in my devotional service, like Maharaj Parikshit is fixed in devotional service, even if they do something that's very bad, su durachar, very bad, because they're fixed in devotional service, I consider that person saintly, and the next verse he says, very quickly, I restore things to their righteous position. I personally intervene in their life because of their devotion to me. So don't think of such a person as I'm going to about to describe. Something that Maharaj Parikshit did that was sudurachar, very bad. There was a purpose behind it from Krishna within his heart that was arranging. He was arranging for Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken to the qualified king Maharaj Parikshit, and so that Maharaj Parikshit could very quickly go back to Godhead just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention, which says that we can also very quickly go back to Godhead by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention. It sure helps to be qualified like Maharaj Parikshit was. We're not. But even still, if we try to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, saying it three times for a reason, with rapt attention, very quickly, the shortcomings that we have due to our past misdeeds and the contaminations of heart that result from those past misdeeds, they can very quickly become cleansed. And very quickly we can achieve that position of purity and transcendence and go back to Godhead very quickly. So one fine day Maharaj Parikshit was in the forest surveying his kingdom, and something very unusual happened. He became overwhelmed with thirst. The same personality who within the womb of his mother, this intense heat weapon that normally would have scorched anybody, He was able to withstand that scorching heat. That same person became overwhelmed with thirst. And so he began searching for water. And in the distance he saw a cottage. And in that cottage, he thought very reasonably, there's someone living and they must have some water. So he went to the cottage and went in the cottage. And there he saw a sage, a learned personality who was situated in a yoga position, and they were in meditation. They weren't just in meditation, they were in trance, samadhi, completely absorbed in meditation. So the second very unnatural thing for Maharaj Parikshit to do was he became very angry. He was situated in perfect stage of devotion, became very angry, so angry he spoke harshly at the sage who was in meditation. And he said, what kind of Brahmin, what kind of saintly person are you? You don't know even the basic etiquette, how to receive a guest in your home. What to speak of, I'm the king. The etiquette in the Vedic practice is someone comes to your home, and even if you are a very poor person, three things are essential, etiquette-wise. A place to sit, some refreshment, some water, and some kind words. That's all. Even if you're a poor person, you can do those three things. And I'm the king, and you don't even honor me in the basic way. This is very unfitting, the quality of a brahmana in my kingdom. And he left angry. He spoke harsh words and he left in anger. And then a third thing happened. As he was walking outside the cottage, he saw a dead snake on the ground. So with his sword, he picked up the dead snake, came back in the cottage and put it around the neck of the king. He said, this is a fitting garland for a person like you, a dead snake. And he left, heading back to the palace to get some water. And as he was heading back to the palace, he had what I call an uh-oh experience. Uh-oh. I did something really bad. He immediately, because he's a quality person, he understood, this is really wrong. What overcame me? Why did I speak this way and behave this way? This is terrible. I made a big offense to such a qualified person. I'm going to get a big reaction for this wrongdoing. So as he was heading back to the palace, by the time he reached the palace, it was fully resolved within his heart. Something, a big time something is going to come to me, a reaction for this. And whatever it is, I deserve whatever punishment the Lord wishes to give me, and I accept it. That was in his heart. Meanwhile, back in the hermitage of the sage, his young son, who had been off with the other boys doing boy things, playing and having a nice time, he came back home. And when he came back home, he saw his father, still in meditation, with a garland of a snake around his neck. He was very angry. And he asked people in the neighborhood, how did this happen? And they said, well, the king, Maharaj Parikshit, he went inside. And he must have done this. He left in a big mood of anger. He must have done this. I curse Maharaj Parikshit, such a person as him. He should be killed by a mystical snake bird. I know how to chant the mantra to kill, to bring a mystical entity, a snake bird. Snake bird. Snake crawl on the ground. They don't have wings. Birds fly in the sky. They don't crawl on the ground. So it was a mystical thing. It wasn't like a new species. It was mystical. Snake bird. So after some time, the father came out of his trance of meditation, and he saw this garland of dead snake. He removed it, and his son was there, and his son immediately started crying. They asked him, "Why are you crying?" "Oh, the king did this to you. I cursed him. He should die from this snake bird." And the king felt very bad. He felt double bad because his son had done this awful thing. And he also felt bad for the king. The king's going to die. He admonished his son, this is not what qualified brahmanas do. This is very bad. You've made a big offense. What the king did, it wasn't good, but it wasn't commensurate with death penalty from a brahman. This is very, very bad." And then for the king, he wanted to inform the king because he didn't know it yet, but he's going to die. He specifically, it says, he didn't go himself to tell him. He wanted to tell him himself and apologize for the wrongdoing of his son. But he knew if he went, the king would feel double bad. "Oh, here's the person I offended. Not only am I going to die, but here's the person I offended." So he didn't go himself. He sent a messenger to inform the king. And when the messenger informed the king, his heart was already ready to receive whatever it is the Lord has planned. And so his thought was, "So be it. I've offended a brahmana, and for this offense, it's appropriate. I should be destroyed." Because the whole of Vedic culture is dependent upon qualified persons who can guide the rest of society. If you don't have qualified persons to guide the rest of society, what's going to happen? Society will go down. That's what's going on. There aren't qualified persons to guide society. So the society goes down, and down, and down, and down. And I've offended such a person. Terrible. So he didn't become afraid or unhappy or try to neutralize or, you know, do something. He just accepted it. And he took off his royal crown, he took off his royal garments, he turned over the kingdom to his son. He took on the garments of a mendicant, went to the sacred river, sent word throughout his kingdom to all the learned persons and sages to please come and advise me what I should do in these 7 remaining days of my life, and to make grant auspiciousness within this circumstance. So I'm going to read just 4 verses from Canto 1, Chapter 19. It's the last last chapter, where the assembly of sages have come, and the king receives them very nicely. They came from all corners of his kingdom, and his kingdom was pretty big. It was the whole planet. It even says some residents of other planets also came. So then the king spoke as follows. The fortunate king said, just 4 verses, "Indeed, we, royal kings, the order of kings, are the most grateful of all who are trained to get favors from the great souls. Generally, you, sages, consider royalty as refuse to be rejected and left at a distant place. The kings are trained to take wisdom from those who are wise, the learned sages of the world. The learned sages of the world, on the other hand, they're trained to detach themselves from things of this world, wealth and power and influence and politics and things that kings are involved with. So saintly people, they consider that which is surrounding a king and the mentality of being a king is something they want to keep at a distance. So he speaks of him like garbage, that refuse to be kept at a distant place. But you're so kind. Instead of that, you've come here. This is an expression or a symptom of your compassion and your greatness. That's the first verse. So he's appreciating their quality. Then he says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of both the transcendental and mundane worlds, has graciously overtaken me in the form of a Brahmana's curse. Due to my being too much attached to family life, the Lord, in order to save me, has appeared before me in such a way that only out of fear I will detach myself from the world. Two things. He's saying, Krishna, you are so kind. Now, if somebody gets news, let's say somebody's got cancer, they find out they have an advanced stage of cancer, who immediately has the immediate thought, Krishna, you're God, you're so kind. Not too many people think like that. Some Prabhupada uses the word reversal. Reversal. Like you're going this way, and then the next thing you know, you're not going that way anymore. You're going a different direction. The opposite direction. You didn't do any turn left or turn right or do a U-turn. You just are moving in the opposite direction. You know what I mean? It happens. Well, next thing you know, it's not do-do-do-do-do anymore. It's something else. What happened? Prabhupada calls that reversal. So, where do your thoughts go when you have a reversal? It's very good to watch your mind and see where it goes, because that tells you what you're attached to. And whatever it is that you're attached to, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that state you will attain without fail. At the time of death, whatever the mind is fixed upon because of attachment, that state you will attain without fail. Now, I learned that from Bhagavad Gita, just a little anecdotal story. One day I was coming home from book distribution, because something that I did as a brahmachari for many years was go out with this knowledge and offer this knowledge to other people to receive it. So I was coming back from my Sankirtan spot by train in New York City. And I had to take the A train and then cross the platform to get the F train to go to where I was going. So it was about 9 o'clock at night, because I was very enthusiastic to distribute books. It was a little bit late, but it was okay. That was my schedule. And as I got off the train to cross the platform to the other train, there was somebody on the platform that was dying. You know what happens when somebody's dying? There's a big crowd of people that get around them and, you know, want to check it out. And so they were around 9 o'clock at night, around the man, and the man's like, you know, twitching and trembling. And so one person said, "Hey man, do you want something? Is there anything you want?" And he said, "Could I have a cigarette?" "Get the guy a cigarette. Get the guy a cigarette." They lit up the cigarette. He couldn't even move his hand. Someone had to like take the puff out of his hand. They blew the smoke out. And "Is there anything else you want? Anything else you want? Hey man, anything else you want?" "I want Susie." And then he was gone with a cigarette in his mouth and "I want Susie." And that's where his mind was at the time of death. So that state he will attain. I mean, I was thinking, how unfortunate that one has those two primary attachments, and that's what your mind is absorbed into the time of death, and you can take a guess what his destination was from the message of Bhagavad Gita. But Maharaj Parikshit, when danger came to him, his mind went to Krishna, thinking, Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. And one of my favorite pastimes of Krishna, where the devotee of Krishna is recognizing that Krishna is so kind, is one of Krishna's friends in Vrindavan, in Dwarka. And his name is Sudama. They were school friends when they were little boys. When Krishna grew up, he became a prince, living in the royal city of Dwarka. And his friend, Sudama, became married, and he was living in a little cottage outside the city of Dwarka. And Sudama was so poor, he only had one cloth. And his wife, he was very skinny because he didn't have that much to eat either. And his wife was in anxiety about his welfare. Anything could happen at any moment, and I'm in anxiety. You know, those of you that are married, you know about, you know, the wife wants something, and so she went to him saying, please, you have a dear friend, Krishna. Just go to Krishna and he'll help you with whatever it is that you need. He didn't want to go to Krishna, but she wanted him to go to Krishna, so he went. And when you go to see a noble personality, you bring some gift. But what did he have for gift? Just had some inferior broken pieces of rice. So his wife put some of that in a cloth, tied it in a knot, and he was carrying a little sack of broken rice to go see Krishna in Dwarka, the city of opulence. And when Krishna saw Sudama, he was so happy because he's his dear friend. He got off his royal throne, he seated Sudama on his throne, and started worshipping him, washed his feet, performed arati, treated him with great majesty. And Sudama was just in tears to see his dear friend Krishna. And they had some exchange, some kind words. Krishna noticed that Sudama had a little pouch behind his back and asked, what's that? He said, oh, it's nothing. So Krishna snatched it from behind Sudama's hand, behind Sudama's back, and saw that it was rice. And he immediately opened the cloth and started eating the rice. On the third time, Rukmini, his wife, checked his hand. He said, don't take any more. She was thinking, it's inferior quality. You should have the best. But she was also thinking, because Sudama has such love for you, how will you possibly repay him for the love that he's offered, this inferior quality rice? And they spent the night together, Krishna and Sudama. And in the next morning, Sudama went back home. And as he was going home, he was thinking, Krishna is so kind. Krishna knew why I went to see him, because he's omniscient. He knows everything. He knew why I came, and he didn't even ask me why I came. Because if he had asked me, I'm a Brahmin, I'm truthful, I'd have to tell him. And I came to get something from Krishna, and Krishna certainly would give to me, and if I received from Krishna something very wonderful, then I would become proud. Krishna knows my heart. He knew I would become proud. So he didn't even ask me. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. All the way home, he's just absorbed in thought. Krishna is so kind. And when he finally reached his home, he couldn't find his home. Instead, he found a palace where his home used to be. And he called out for his wife. Where are you? What happened to my home? And this woman came out of the palace. He didn't even recognize her because she was dressed in gorgeous attire and fine ornaments and fragrances and thought, wait a minute, that's my wife. But this doesn't look like you. What happened? And she said, oh, I thought you made all this arrangement. You asked Krishna and Krishna provided all of this so we wouldn't be in a poverty condition anymore. And to himself he thought, Krishna's so kind. Krishna's so kind. Krishna's so kind. And Maharaj Prakshit was thinking, Krishna's so kind. He's made an arrangement. So this is the second part. To detach me from my attachments. I'm so attached to family life. The only way that I can go back to Godhead is I become detached from worldly things. I'm so attached. The only way Krishna could free me from this attachment was fear. He knows my heart. So he's given me this opportunity of fear of death so that I can become detached. And in my state of detachment, I can progress toward the goal, going back to Godhead. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. Try it next time you have a reversal. First, think of Krishna, and then think, Krishna is so kind. Try it. See what happens. If your quality is like that of Maharaj Prakshit, very attached to Krishna, that's how you'll think. That tells us something about the quality of Maharaj Prakshit. Two more verses. Then he then said, O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul. And let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way, for I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let that snake bird, or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created, bite me at once. I only desire that you continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. So, his heart has already been given to Krishna. Even before he was born, he was in that state. And the rest of his life was similar. He's fully dedicated to Krishna. Since my heart is fully dedicated to Krishna, you kindly accept me in that way and keep my consciousness fixed in that condition. How? By speaking transcendental sound vibrations, by chanting his name, by describing his glories and his wonderful pastimes and his loving activities in relation to his devotees. Kindly give me this benediction. And then last, he said, again, offering obeisances unto all you Brahmanas, I pray that if I shall again take my birth in the material world. So Krishna is arranging for me to go to the spiritual world by breaking my attachments. But if it's his plan that I take birth again in this world, my dear saintly persons, I ask for the following three benedictions. One, wherever it is that I take my birth, may I be attached to the Supreme Lord. So that should be sufficient. But he also asks for the association of those who are devoted to him similarly. So that's very nice. The association of devotees and attachment to the Lord. But that's not all. He also asks for the benediction that I may have a friendly regard for all living entities. Because it's not just us and God, it's all his living entities, not just human forms of life, all other forms of life. And this is a very nice teaching, very instructive, of something that if you had the opportunity to ask for anything that you wanted, what a wonderful set of things to ask for. Attachment to God, association with the godly, and a friendly disposition towards all. And the true friend is one who thinks of the spiritual well-being of the other. I was speaking about this over the weekend. like this guy over here, this tree. For those who are devotees of Krishna, we understand there's a spirit soul that's animating this tree. In the human form of life, the soul is within the region of the heart. In the tree, the soul is in the region of the roots. And the watering of the roots not only, makes the flourishing of the tree, but the soul is also there. And that tree, that spirit soul in a tree body, has been here longer than I have. I don't know how long he was here, or she, or it, or whatever. And they are, when we're out somewhere else, they're here right in front of the deities and the kirtan, and whenever there's a class, they're always attending class and hearing the kirtan. They're very fortunate. And so the spirit soul that's in that tree's body isn't ordinary. The destination of that soul after the soul leaves the tree body and goes to its next destination, whatever that is, it's going to be very, very, very favorable. And so to be the best friend of the tree, we give it enough water, but we also give the tree this opportunity to hear the holy name. So one thing we could do would just make the temple room filled with trees. Plants and whatever other kind of insects and bugs and you name it, fill it up with a zoo or something. But better to fill it up with human forms of life that can hear the kirtan, because the human form of life can benefit even more because of the advanced stage of consciousness. And the best friendship is to give a connection with the Supreme to those who are your friends. And you can have a friendly regard for people you don't even know by the same gesture, not some artificial way or fanatical way or arbitrary way, but a very appropriate, kind-hearted gesture of giving knowledge or giving joy or giving, like we're going to, as soon as I stop speaking, we'll go take prasadam. That's another nice way to sanctified food. We can distribute sanctified food to different people, not just because then the belly becomes full, but spiritually there's benefit. That's friendship. It's a loving exchange according to the scripture. Bhunte bhojayate chaiva in Sanskrit. You offer prasadam to others and you receive prasadam from others. The mercy of Krishna to others and receive from others. It's a loving exchange. So befriend others in that way. Somehow, Maharaj Pariksit is asking for that kind disposition. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'd like to take another 10 minutes or so, but I don't think I should do that. Because I'll just mention, that was from the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Over here is 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, one of four volumes. That's how big Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's, one of four volumes of the 10th canto, where a dear devotee of Krishna in Mathura speaks the same thing. I'll just say it briefly, really briefly. Krishna appeared in as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. The very evening that he was born, Krishna assumed a childlike. A huge form of Lord Vishnu became a child, requested Vasudeva and Devaki, Vasudeva to take him to the other side of the river, Jamuna River, to Gokul, because wicked Kamsa, the king, who had imprisoned his father and imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki and wanted to kill the children born of Devaki. He was not a nice man. transfer me to the other side of the river Jamuna in the dead of night in the middle of a storm, and he would then be safe. It's a long narration. 12 years passed. Kamsa, the wicked king, tried in many ways to destroy the child. All those who came to destroy the child were destroyed in very amazing ways. Then Kamsa got the following idea, inspired by Narada Muni. That's another story. He thought, I'll invite Krishna to come to the capital, to Mathura. Mathura is the capital of a large district of Mathura. And I'll invite Krishna to come to a festival. So he sent his messenger, Uncle Akrura, to go to bring Krishna to Mathura. And if I had 20 minutes, I would tell you all the details, but it's very nice. Maybe another time. Should I go ahead? Well, you know, people like taking prasadam too. You're fine. Okay. Everybody's fine. Okay. I'll do it halfway. Akura had a very fine chariot, the best of royal chariots. And the residents of Vrindavan, they didn't want Krishna to leave Vrindavan. They did everything they could to stop him from taking Krishna to Mathura. They grabbed the reins of the horses. Some of them placed their bodies before the chariot wheel. Some of them placed their bodies before the horses so the horses couldn't move. And they were crying and crying and pleading. But cruel Akura. His name means not cruel. Krura means not cruel. So they said, you were named wrong. You're cruel. You're Krura, not Akrura. And we curse you that as we're having to feel separation from Krishna, you will also have to feel separation from Krishna, just like us. And so it happened later on in Dwaraka. So many nice things. There's pages and pages describing this wonderful scene, the drama of the feelings of love and separation. Our Vaishnava acharyas teach, love in meeting is very nice. Love in separation is more than that. It increases the intensity of a love or affection. Where then one is anticipating again meeting in that mood of separation, thinking of the beloved like that. It's a crescendo of intense love. Even the young girls in Vrindavan, they were shy and they didn't let anyone know that they had such feelings for Krishna. They overcame that shyness and were displaying such affection for Krishna openly before everybody. Please don't take Krishna from Vrindavan. And Akura left. Akura left Vrindavan. And it took him a long time to get to Vrindavan, to get to Mathura. It normally takes about an hour and a half. I've done it. Got on a tanga, a horse-drawn cart from the Mathura train station to go to Vrindavan. It takes an hour and a half. It took Kura all day. And here's why. Some detail. Not too much. On the way, Krishna knew that the residents of Vrindavan were feeling pain of separation. So he was glancing. And the glance of Krishna is not an ordinary glance, it's very powerful. Just by his glance, as his glance was received by the residents in Vrindavan that saw him leaving, their hearts became filled with love. And Mother Yashoda, our Acharya is described. Mother Yashoda, his mother, her heart was broken. So Krishna sent a messenger with one young boy to go back and tell Mother Yashoda it's going to be a long journey to Mathura and I'll become hungry. So please prepare some food for me. So on the journey, I won't be hungry. So he gave Mother Yashoda something to do. It took some time to do all these things. And then the second thing is, there was a place along the path going to Mathura where Krishna and Balaram asked, please stop the chariot, we'd like to take our sacred bath in the Jamuna before we enter Mathura. So he obliged, he stopped the chariot, they went and took their bath, got back on the chariot, and then Nakura asked permission, may I also take my bath? They said, yes, please go. So as he went into the river Jamuna, down the river bank, into the river, there he saw Krishna and Balaram in the river. And he was startled because he just left them in the chariot. So he went back up the riverbank and looked. And there they were seated in the chariot, smiling. So then he went back down the riverbank and instead of seeing Krishna and Balaram, he saw Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, right in the river. And one part of Goloka is Svetadvip, where the personality of Godhead reclining on Anantashesh, surrounded by all the personified Vedas and the great sages and demigods offering hymns and prayer to the Lord. So right there, half immersed in water, doing his duties, his religious duties, with folded hands, he offered beautiful prayers. And according to the scripture, Akur achieved spiritual perfection from the wonderful prayers that he offered to Krishna in that form of the Supreme Personality Godhead reclining on the river Jamuna, on the back of Anantashesh. And then he went back to the chariot after some time and he saw Krishna and Balaram again smiling. And Krishna said, Akura, it took so long. Did you see something wonderful while you were there? And Akura said, you who are the source of all spiritual and material creations is the perfection of vision. That's enough for me. Let's go to Mathura. So he got in the chariot and they went to Mathura. And again, our acharyas say because Akura didn't want other people to check Krishna's progress, he took a detour, like a back road. And it took him all day long to get to Mathura. And when he reached Mathura, Nanda Maharaj was already there in Mathura. He was thinking, it's time for me to pay my annual taxes to the king. So he put some grains and dairy products on the bullock carts, which go very slowly compared to a chariot. And he got there first. He was waiting on a little hillock, a raised area, waiting for Krishna to come, anticipating, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Finally, Krishna came. And Krishna was happy to see the big, opulent city of Mathura. So he told the boys, let's go have a look around. Imagine, 12 years living in a village, coming to a big city. Let's go have a look around. So the cowherd boys, they were game for go look around and they went with Krishna. Wherever Krishna wants to go is good. So they had three encounters, or four. First they met a washerman. One of the qualities of Krishna described in Nectar Devotion is he's very expert at dressing. When the curtain opens, notice how expert is Krishna at dressing. He dresses better than anybody. You won't even name names of people that may think that they're dapper dressers. Can't hold a candle to Kishore Kishori. They're the best. So he is entering into Mathura, and appropriate, he should have royal garments instead of village attire. So he saw a washerman carrying a big bundle. And he requested, my dear sir, very sweet, it will be very pious of you. And indeed, you will receive great, great benefit kindly, just some of the cloth, that this large quantity of cloth that you're carrying, please give to Balaram and my cowherd boyfriends, so we can enter properly attired into Mathura. The washerman is very insulted and very insulting. He spoke very harshly. Two things. He said, you boys, you're running around in the forest, herding cows and dusty and village garments. What are you doing coming into Mathura? What to speak of? These are the clothes of the king. Why, if the king knew that you were thinking to take the property of the king, you'd be finished. Be gone with you now, while you're still alive. Consider yourself fortunate. Then he spoke of the cowherd boys in language that Krishna didn't like. He used bad words. One of them, he called them foolish. But Krishna honors his cowherd boyfriends. So Krishna approached the washerman with just the tips of his, the side of his hand. He touched the side of the washerman's head, the neck, and he had a problem. His head fell off. And then there's this bundle of clothes, and Krishna said, Balaram, this would look very good on you. And Subham and Sridham, these would be very nice for you. And they gave something to Krishna. So now they're... It's like deity dressing. He had his abhishek, now he's got his dress, and next come the ornaments. So he saw a weaver. And he spoke the same way to the weaver. And the weaver was very happy. You're the personality of Godhead. I'll be happy to give you anything. Tell me. And he gave to Krishna whatever Krishna wanted. And Krishna said the following, you have pleased me very much. So I'd like to give you this benediction. At the end of this life, you'll achieve the spiritual world with a sarupya mukti, a form like the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. And during this lifetime, your life will be filled with opulence. Listed the different ways in which he would be opulent. The weaver was very happy. And Krishna was very happy. And then next came the garland. So he went to the home of a florist. Listen to this. Those of you from India, you know what I'm about to say. It is the job of a florist to gather nice flowers. So they go to public places or their own special places and gather flowers so they can sell them in their florist shop. But he heard that there's really nice flowers in Vrindavan. So from time to time he would venture into Vrindavan to gather very, very fragrant and attractive, colorful flowers. And one time when he was there, he saw Krishna off in the distance, Krishna and Balaram, and the cowherd boys playing with their cows. He was completely charmed. So every day thereafter, he went to the place where he would find Krishna and Balaram and simply drink the beauty of their charming features. And he became very attached, a devotee of Krishna, although he lived in Mathura. Want to find the exact words. Not jumping off the page. Well, he went to the home of that florist, and the florist had the same name as his Brahmin friend, Sudama, the florist. And when Krishna came to his door, he was jubilant. Immediately invited him in, gave him a nice little seat to sit in, requested Krishna, please let us bathe your feet. He bathed Krishna's feet. He sprinkled the water on his head and his family's head and told Krishna that you brought your feet inside my house. Now I consider my life to be sanctified, my family, my home. My ancestors and future generations are now... Life is made perfect just by your coming here. And one version described by our acharyas is Krishna, out of the corner of his eye, he saw a half-finished garland hanging on the wall. So cultured people don't even need to speak with their mouth, they speak with their eyes. He just glanced, and immediately the florist knew Krishna likes that garland. He was very happy, because he had planned to give that to Krishna, and Krishna already liked it before it was completed. So he got the rest of the flowers, completed the garland, and garlanded Krishna, garlanded Balaram, and Krishna said, "My dear florist, you have pleased me so much by your pure devotion. So I want you to ask a benediction of me. Anything that you would like. So what would you ask for?" "Well, let me see. There's the latest version of iPad, and I've had my eye on a special car. I'd like one of those. Maybe a nice house by the sea. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari." Something like that. Not Sudama. He said, "You have already made my life perfect. So what can I ask for? May I ask for birth after birth? May I remain attached to your lotus feet and have the opportunity to serve you? May I have the association of your devotees, similarly disposed towards you? And may my heart be filled with compassion for all living entities." He didn't say friendly, he said almost the same. Compassion towards all living entities. There's symmetry in the message of the Bhagavatam. These are things one can say, these are things that any religion will teach. You should do good for others, should be attached to God, and be respectful and have good relations with the godly. But the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam is such, not only what is said, but the way it is said, bringing the personality of Godhead with His loving features and His qualities and His form and His wonderful loving exchanges with His devotees. It draws one's attention from the material plane to the transcendental plane. If we wish to be like Maharishi Parikshit, where when some reversal happens and we're thinking Krishna is so kind, immediately thinking Krishna is so kind, there must be attachment for Krishna. Otherwise you're going to think something else, like, why did this happen to me? Or something. He didn't think that thought. How to become attached to Krishna in a circumstance where the world is so complex, the things that are demanding our time and attention are so many. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's difficult. So Krishna speaks about this in Bhagavad Gita. The design of this material world is very difficult. Daiva yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mama eva yeka padyante maya metam tarantite. So those of you that have Bhagavad Gita, you received it this evening, please take the time to read it. You'll find it's very nice. Krishna is saying there that the struggle in this material world is perpetual. Very, very difficult to overcome this difficult struggle. But you can easily go beyond the struggle. The whole atmosphere of material existence can be transcended just by surrendering to Krishna, by bringing your thoughts and giving your heart to Krishna like the florist did. He didn't have to ask for anything. Krishna was happy to give him. Because he already knows what's in our heart, because he's in our heart. He already knows. So if we can make our heart filled with thoughts of how to serve Krishna, how to please the God and His part and parcel living entities in a way that's very pleasing to Him. That's the way of when you read this Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you find the how to come to that position. That's what we're wishing you to take home with you. And bring it into your heart and make it part of your life. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.